Okay, slight delay, but some technical difficulties, but Paul Davis is now set up, just like Dave. We arrived here this morning with a whopping 9 hours of jet lag from California, or?
East Coast 7,
oh, that's easy. Okay.
Well, it certainly is at this time of day. Very easy at this time of day.
The initial talk planned by Paul was about integrating MIDI into Ardo, but this is a topic that I don't know if has been delayed or if you thought about something else first. But now we renamed this, and this will be about adding VST support, which is also a very hot topic. And we have 5 minutes less than planned, but still, I know you make it because you're a perfect speaker, Paul. Go ahead.
Okay. Start my stopwatch. So we got adding VST support to Linux audio applications. Before I begin, and I'll say this again at the end, this is work done, or this talk is based on work done by, what was the pronunciation? He's here, right? But where? I had guessed that it was Kettle, but apparently not. Okay, yeah. But it was done. It's based on work by Kettle, Torben, and myself. So what is VST? It stands for Virtual Studio Technology. It was developed by Steinberg, a corporation in Germany. As most of you may be aware, it is a plug-in API for audio and MIDI that lets you add functionality and processing to existing audio applications. It's existed for some time now on the Windows platform. I don't think I do, but who knows? Yeah. Does that work? It's existed for some time now on the Windows platform for Mac OS 9 or Mac Classic and Mac OS 10, although it's proving less successful there. VST plugins tend to be divided into two parts. There's a DSP core, and then there's an optional customized GUI, which the developer of the plugin can write. The GUI is not required. You can certainly write VST plugins that don't have a GUI with them in much the same way that all LADSBAR plugins are. But the majority of VST plugins tend to come with a GUI as well as the DSP component. So what's the problem? Well, the problem is that the plugins we're interested in here, because most of us are running on x86 hardware, will be the ones for Windows. And these plugins come packaged in a file format that is specific to Windows and the x86. It's not the kind of file format that you find on Linux for Linux executables or Linux shared libraries. But in addition to that, once you unpack those plugins, you'll find that there's code inside of it which makes calls to the Windows API. System calls, calls to draw things on the screen, calls to set up timers, calls to create threads, all kinds of stuff. And Linux, of course, is Linux. It doesn't support these natively. So luckily, we do have an answer. The answer is Wine. Who knows exactly what it stands for? It could be Windows Emulator. Wine is not an emulator. It doesn't really matter. The important thing to know about Wine is that it is a system that provides at least 95% of the entire Windows 32 API. And it provides them by translating them into some equivalent on Linux. So, for instance, if a Windows program makes a call that will draw a line on a screen or on a window, it will translate that into some X primitive that will draw a line. It manages to trap all system calls so that things that would normally have gone into the Windows kernel will get caught by Wine, and it can translate them into something appropriate. Maybe a system call, perhaps something else. And it also traps exceptions. If a Windows program would have caused some sort of equivalent of a segmentation fault, Wine will catch that and handle it itself. Right now, Wine adds up to more than 1 million lines of code. And from the statistics that I saw a few weeks ago, it's gaining and or changing at about 25% every single month. It's quite a rapid rate of change, faster than the kernel. So what does this mean? Okay. Always remember this. For old wine is good, new wine is better, especially if you prefer white. So there's a second dimension to the problem, however. So we've got Wine. we all know, because we've read stuff online, that you can run Office under some versions of Wine, and you can run this game under Wine. Wine is intended for running Windows applications. But we don't have applications, we have plugins. These aren't things that you would launch from a command line or click on from a file browser or manager or something. They're plugins. And we want to use them in a native Linux application. Now, we're not the only people who want to do this. The guys who are working on Mono are very interested in doing this. Game people who want to use DirectX effects. There are several other examples that the Wine people have told me about who are interested in this idea of loading Windows 32 code into a Linux application. Now, it's also worth noting that this is already being done by the video player guys, by MPlayer and Zine. They take these Win32 codecs for handling QuickTime or handling, you know, in Windows media files, and they run them inside of a native Linux application. How does it step forward? Well, the first thing that happens is we have a breakthrough from the work that Kettle did, which is to actually the first open source implementation of VST support. There are a couple of commercial companies who are doing this that may have gotten to this prior to Kettle doing it. But so what did VST Server, which is the name of his program, consist of? Well, it's a Win32 application. It's written using the type of programming that you do under Windows. But Wine provides a tool called WineBuild that will let you take the source code of that application, compile it, and obviously links against the libraries that Wine provides so that those Windows 32 calls get handled in the right way. And you end up with a native Linux application, even though it was written as if it was a Windows program. It's pretty clever. This program can then load these Windows shared libraries or DLLs or VST plugins, and it runs a plugin. And now all you have to do is to connect it to other programs by using some kind of client-server protocol. All of a sudden, we've got audio and control data going back and forth, and we're running a VST plugin on Linux. Some of the strong features of it are that it isolates the VST plugin from any other code. The VST plugin is being executed in the context of this special application. It is not running in the context of your audio application, which means that the plugin can crash and it doesn't affect your application. It means that the plugin's gone, but your application carries on running. For the same reason, plugins also can't mess with the host data. They're in separate processes, separate address spaces. The plugin can go on as many pointer walks. It can have as many buffer overruns as it wants to. It doesn't touch the host at all. So this is great. It's a great design. But there is a problem, which is that it involves two context switches to run a plugin's process callback. The process callback is the callback inside of the DSP core of the plugin that we execute in order to get it to process the data, the audio data, either to eat or to spit out sound. And in order to run it, we have to context switch over to this special application, get it to run the process callback, and then context switch back to the host. It works fine, except that it doesn't scale. If you imagine in an application like Ardor, we have, say, 24 tracks. Imagine having most of them with, say, 2 to 4 plugins on. That's a hell of a lot of context switches. And that just isn't going to scale for you know, real-time use at all. So fixing this involves a kind of a different approach. And we want to be able to run VST plugins in the same process as the host, which means we have to be able to load and run Windows code inside our native Linux host. That means that we can't use Wine, that is, Wine the application, not necessarily Wine the library, and we can't use WineBuild. But we can get started, or Torben got started actually, with a hack that came out of the Mono project, because these guys were interested in loading Windows plugins too. And the hack looks a bit like this. The first thing to know is this little chunk of code up here. It's a function called winmain. And whenever Wine starts up, it, whatever it's doing, it tries to look for a function called winmain and it will execute it. And we provide a winmain that just calls long jump. providing a value of 1. And we'll get back to what that does for those of you who've forgotten the exact semantics of set jump and long jump, assuming I can remember it myself. So this is somewhere in our code. Somewhere else in our code, in fact, right in the middle of our real typical Unix main function, is this code. If set jump jump buff equals 0, then wind init. So now we call wind init, and we provide it some arguments which basically say, hey, just execute me, all right? A wind init essentially reloads our code, finds this win main function, executes it. Bingo, we jump back to here, except that our return value is 1. So this test false, and now we end up down here. And we have a thread running that has already run all of the wind initialization code that the wind guys will provide. We've gone into our win main, but now we're back at a point where we have control. So we have a regular Linux application, but we're ready to run Windows thread. We're ready to run Windows code in this thread. It's great. It's clever too. But there's a problem. The MonoHack does not support threads. It works for a very simple set of things that they were testing it with, but if the program or the Windows code that you want to run uses multiple threads, it'll just break in various horrible, unpredictable ways. And as we all know, since we all use Jack, right? All audio apps need threads. So by itself, that's not going to work. So luckily, some of us have had the misfortune to be deeply involved in thread systems for the x86 processor class and are able to dive in and figure out what needs to be done here. The basic problem here is that all thread systems, there has to be some way to identify what the current thread is if you're running multiple threads. And on Windows, the convention is that you look at the FS register in the processor. Just to demonstrate that Windows is not weird or pathological or odd about this, on Linux nowadays, we use the GS register, and this is specifically to avoid clobbering the FS register. It's kind of a convenient decision. The kernel and the wine guys talked about this, and at one point, somebody suggested that Unix should use the FS register as well. If they'd have done that, we would have been completely out of luck here. Luckily, most of the Unix thread stuff uses the GS register. The older versions of Linux threads, and I mean quite old now, would have put stuff on the stack. That doesn't work, and nobody does it anymore. So what's in that register? It points to a block of information that describes the thread, and it points to some information that's in a processor-specific area of, I don't even know if it's memory. I think it's actually just some fixed RAM on the chip. The key point here is that any thread that's going to run Windows code has to have this register set correctly. If it doesn't have the register set correctly, when the wine implementation of the Windows code goes to figure out which thread is doing what, it looks in the FS register, it finds who knows what, maybe a random value, maybe 0. It can't look the thread up. Things die horribly. So we have to get that set up correctly. Now, in a normal wine application, would normally type wine space office, for example. Not many of you would run office, but just as an example. Wine starts up first, loads office, and things get rolling. But the key thing is here that wine takes control of thread management. Now, if we're running a native Linux application, this isn't going to happen. Wine doesn't get started first. Wine gets started when we decide to call that wine init function. So we have the capability to create threads before wine gets started that it doesn't know about. And in addition, we can also continue to create new threads using the native Linux API, which would be pthread create, that again, all this wine stuff doesn't know about. And because it doesn't know about them, this FS register is not set up, which means that if we try to execute any Windows code in one of these threads, things are probably going to die. So we wrote a new function, which it seems likely it will get merged into wine, although we have some cleanup to do on it first, which is called wine adopt thread. And basically, as the name suggests, it lets us take an existing Linux thread that was created using pthread create or some equivalent and convert it, if you like, or adopt it as a thread that can now run Windows code. And we do this in a not particularly elegant way. In our wine initialization code that we call, we create a special thread using the Windows API, and it waits for notifications that a new Linux thread has been created. When it gets the notification, it tells Wine all about it. We get a new entry in the local descriptor table. We get a value that can be stored in the FS register. We pass it back to the thread that was created. It gets set in that thread, and presto. We now have a Linux thread that has the FS register set, and it can now execute Windows code. If any of you know a little bit about the x86 architecture, but not as much as I do now, if you know as much as I did 3 weeks ago, then you might be wondering, well, hold on a minute, when we context switch and we do all that stuff, what happens to the FS register? The FS register is special. It doesn't get restored. It's not handled. I don't want to go into the details of that. It's not handled in the same way as the regular registers are. And so once it's set, it's persistent. So just to recap on this, what this wine adopt thread stuff gives us is a way to take a Linux thread that's running in a regular Linux application and set it up so that we can run Windows code. And we also have all the Wine libraries to implement virtually all of the Windows API. And so now we can theoretically run a plugin. But we're not finished yet, unfortunately, because there's the GUI to consider. As I said earlier, most of them come with their own editor. And what they do inside the editor, it doesn't really matter to us. Some of them use Windows GUI programming stuff. Some of them use this library from Steinberg called VST GUI. It doesn't really matter because in the end it translates down to some calls that use the GDI layer, and we have to support that, and Wine does. But what does matter is that we have to have a Windows event loop running in the host. We have to do this for much the same reason. It's not that Windows is weird in this sense. Anybody who's used GTK or Qt or any of the Linux toolkits will probably understand that there's lots of problems doing multiple threads with access to the GUI code. And you can either have locks to provide synchronization and exclusion, or you can make sure you only have one thread that ever makes GUI calls. Well, in Windows, they express it a little differently, but the result is the same, which is that the thread that handles events on a window has to be the thread that created that window. And therefore, there has to be an event loop running in that thread that handles all the events. And so we have to get that set up in the host. Luckily, we will take care of that for you. But before we get to that, we have to deal with window management. So the plugin, you know, gets a window. Basically, when it starts up, we say, okay, we notice that you have come with your own GUI, and we'll create a window for you. And here's the ID of the window. You can go draw on it however you'd like to. So we had this window that was created using Windows code, Windows calls. And of course, really, because this is Linux, it actually is an X window. But no X toolkit that is running knows about it. It wasn't created using a call to GTK window new, or I don't know what the QT thing is, but you know, whatever the functions are that create new top level windows, that wasn't used here. The toolkit doesn't know about it. If we leave it like that, which we could do, it means that the host application can't really manage this window. It doesn't know about it. It doesn't have a handle on it. It can't wrap it. It can't add extra buttons to it. It can't do it the way it would do if it had created the window itself. So somehow we have to adopt not only a thread, but a window. Luckily, there is a wonderful call in X reparent window, which does exactly this. So what we end up doing is we basically wait for this GUI window to be created, or mapped, or drawn on, or become active, or we don't really know what, actually. Torben and I have been experimenting, and we sort of have some idea of what the right event is. But we wait for something to happen to the window, and then we use whatever wrapper the particular toolkit offers to call X reparent window. In GTK, we use a GTK socket, and we tell it to take care of this window, and lo and behold, we now have a GTK widget which contains the plugin window, and now we can do all kinds of things with it that we could do with any other GTK window. Ideally, we'd like to use the X embed extension, which was specifically intended for doing this kind of cross-toolkit embedding stuff. The problem is that Wine does not support this. So although it would be nice to use it, it doesn't really accomplish very much. After we've reparented the window, and again, just to go back over this, reparenting simply means that we have taken the original window that the GUI was going to draw in and made it the child of some other window. After we've done that, everything's great from the X side, but the Windows side of things that the plugin is executing doesn't know about this. And in particular, it means that it's not a top level window anymore, which means that if the window moves, the Windows layer doesn't get told that it moved anymore. Which means that when you click the mouse somewhere on it, the plugin code gets the coordinates of the mouse click totally wrong. So somehow we have to forward a notification that the window was moved, because we become its parent and we have to look after it the way that parents do or don't. In GTK, this is pretty easy, and it will be exactly the same in all the other toolkits. The exact mechanism is a bit different from one to the other, but it's basically the same. We have to catch configure events on the top level window that we have put the plugin window into, and we have to synthesize a new X event and send it to the one that is hiding the Windows window. God, this language gets awful. The window that's the window for the Windows window. In addition to this, if you do something like what Torben is doing with Gallen, or G Allen, I don't know, where he's actually putting lots of these plugin windows inside of one single X window, and he lets you move the plugin window around in that window, you have to tell the Windows layer about that as well, because that's also moving and it needs to know about it. And that can get a little tricky. It's not completely trivial to make this work. Luckily, Gallen is an example, and it does work. So, with all this wonderful technology, what do you actually need to write a Linux host application that can run VST plugins? Well, in addition to using our library, which I'm going to come to in just a minute, you're going to have to supply what's called an audio master callback, and this handles requests from the plugin. And the kinds of requests, some of them are completely trivial. They're things like, which version of VST are we running? And you just answer two. To what is the name of the host? And you just give the name of your program. Others become a lot more complicated. There are time information callbacks that want to get information about the tempo and the time position and the bar position. There's information about whether various ins and outs of the plugins are connected and so forth. And what happens is, the plugin makes a callback, and it is going to come through to your function, and it has to handle that. You're also going to have to probably wrap our structures, the FST data structures. FST stands for Free ST, which for English speakers sounds a bit like VST, but somebody told me if you're not an English speaker, it doesn't necessarily work that way. Just in the same way that if any of you have used LadSpar, you probably don't use the LadSpar data structures as is. You probably wrap them or inherit from them or do something with them to use them in your application. You probably have to do the same with the structures that we provide you with. You're going to have to take care of window management, which I just mentioned. That is relaying all these window motion and resizing stuff. You're also going to have to handle all the signals that Wine manages. I want to touch on this too much, but basically Wine by itself tries to trap loads of Unix signals, because normally they'd be generated by exceptions in the Windows code. But now you've got Linux code and Windows code running at the same time. The signals could come from either place. And we feel that it's more appropriate to not have Wine take care of them. So we give you a default signal handler, which will just basically cause your program to exit. And in reality, that's about all you probably would want to do anyway. But there is room for you to add your own handlers to do various things. And lastly, you're also going to have a scheme for handling VST plugin presets and parameters. This is something that is host specific. The library that Tom and I have written can't do this for you. You have to understand how and when and why you might want to manage the state of the plugin. At some point, your host application is going to have to figure out what plugins are out there and what they can do. And guess what? It's really, really, really slow. And there's no big surprise, because every time you load one of these little plugins, you have to load a whole bunch of other Windows shared library files. We've tried to optimize this so that a whole bunch of them are preloaded, but the way Wine is written, if a shared library comes in with another shared library, when the other shared library is unloaded, it gets unloaded too. And so if there are shared libraries that are used by many plugins, they all come in, they all go out, they all come in, they all go out, and seriously, I have probably 85 plugins in my VST directory, and it can take 4 minutes to actually to do discovery in the obvious way. Luckily, there's always a not-so-obvious way, and Torben built this nice little tool called FST config, which essentially loads all the plugins and caches the information about them. And we have a little call FST get info. You hand it the name of the DLL file that you thought you wanted to load. It looks at the cache. If the cache is up to date, and you get the information back, and instead of taking 4 minutes, it takes a fraction of a second. Much, much faster. There's some argument that says somebody should write LRDF wrappers for all this stuff, but I doubt if anybody in here is going to volunteer to do that, and in which case it's not going to happen. So out of all this work, what do we get? We get a little API. Hopefully it never has to get really any bigger than this. You call FST init in your host application to get things rolling. When you want to load a particular plugin, you call FST load. I haven't put the arguments in here, but you basically pass it path names and stuff. So you load a plugin, unload the plugin, instantiate a plugin. Anybody who's familiar with Ladspar or other plugins will know what I mean by that. Close, shuts down an instantiated plugin. FST run editor does all of this Windows stuff that I talked about, creating the windows and gets it mapped onto the screen and all the rest of it. FST destroy editor does the reverse of that. And we have FST get info and FST free info, which uses this cache of information about plugins. And that's it. There's nothing else that we need to provide. You need to provide all the stuff that I mentioned about when I talked about running a host. So, success stories. Contact and battery from Native Instruments are both two relatively large, fairly sophisticated VST instruments. They both work perfectly. Crystal is a very nice freeware monophonic synthesizer that does some fairly sophisticated synthesis and has a very rich graphical user interface, and it works flawlessly. And there's lots and lots of small, interesting and, you know, potentially useful plugins that work. However, it's very difficult to predict what plugins will work and which won't work. It's very difficult when a plugin doesn't work to even know why it doesn't work. It could be that there's just a bug in the plugin code that the author didn't know about because it never manifests itself on Windows. It could be the author used some part of the Windows API that Wine doesn't support correctly. It could be that Torben and I have made a mistake and our code is buggy. Heaven forbid that such a thing should happen, but and therefore it's really quite difficult when you have plugins. I mean, there's a set of plugins, for example, from a company or a person called Kearhouse Audio. Only one of his plugins works, and the others will all pop up on the screen, and whenever you click a mouse on the GUI, it'll just crash instantly. Who knows why? We might track it down. He may be one of the more cooperative authors. It's certainly very helpful to be able to point to things like contact and battery and say, look, guys, there are these big honking VSTIs that run perfectly, and you're telling me that your tape delay implementation or phaser crashes. I mean, however, we haven't had to actually try that yet. So there are problems. And as I said, I have in my own directory now, I've got about 85 plugins, all of which work very reliably. And of the total I downloaded so far, I would say probably about a third have failed. There is one other category of problems with this whole scheme, which is that some of the most desirable plugins use copy protection. And although some copy protection schemes will work with Wine, there are some, for instance, that require you to put the CD in the CD drive. That will work. There are some that require you to type in a serial number. That will work. There are some that will do challenge response. That will work. But there are also some that use iLock, and that won't work. iLock is a commercial fraud. I mean, sorry, it's a commercial copy protection system. And it doesn't exist for Linux. I know some people have talked to them about implementing it for Linux, but frankly, it seems to me unlikely, because if they do it for Linux, it'll be even more useless than it is under Windows. So if you have a plugin system that uses iLock, essentially there's no way it'll ever run on Linux, at least not in the foreseeable future. And this happens to include all the Waves plugins, which are probably among the more desirable of them all. Waves plugins have a different problem as well. At a technical level, that's solvable, but this iLock thing is not. So in a minute, I'm just going to do some demonstrations of a few plugins to just show you it all working and stuff. But the program that we've written has a lot of room to evolve. And personally, this is what I'd like it to evolve into. This is a not particularly well-known program for Windows called Forte, from a very amusing guy. I should have actually put his other web page up about the history of the company. It's just great. He just talks about how he spends his time in hot tubs and has never actually released a product and doesn't really have any idea of what he's doing. But basically, this is a type of program that seems to be becoming more and more popular on Windows, as people would like to run these really fancy instruments. I mean, the Arturia Moog modular, for example, lots of people say it's as good, if not better, than the original Moog modular. Just having a little thing to run it all by itself is very desirable for lots of people. They don't want to have to run Cubase or Nuendo in order to run an instrument during a concert. And so this sort of application lets you load up a bunch of instruments and effects and just manipulate them very simply. There's no sequencing, there's no recorded data, it's just a plugin host, very, very simple. And I think it looks okay too. So before we go on to the quick demonstration, just a quick mention, as I said, Torben Hone was equally, if not more, responsible for all this work as I was. It's been a fun month or so getting this all to work. Etel's original VST server really got the ball rolling here in showing that this sort of stuff could be done. And the Mono crew obviously got the ball rolling on how to use Wine as a shared library. There's a bunch of people from the Wine project who have been very helpful and provided advice. Smart Electronics have cool plugins and they're open source, which is really helpful for having a look at and seeing how they work. And then, of course, you have to thank Steinberg, who produced all this stuff. Except we can't really thank them because we're not allowed to use their header files. Well, we can use them, but you have to download them yourself because I can't give them to you. But then they're not under the GPL. So if you use them in your application with another GPL library, you can't use this stuff. So we could rewrite the headers, but then that might be a violation of their copyright anyway. So actually, you can't use it, any of this stuff at all. Legally. Thank you for whoever pointed that out. All right. So now, if things will cooperate with me, I did this several times on the plane and the train, and it all worked. But you know what's going to happen? It's not going to work here. So, okay. That's a bad start. Bing. This is a little plugin called Relofter. Oops, I need to get my... Those of you who don't use the Jack Patch Bay, my God, it is fantastic. I didn't know about this till about 5 weeks ago, and it has totally changed my life. Well, not all my life, really. I'm exaggerating. Okay, so I think these are connected. Let me just play this a minute. Can we get a little bit more volume on that? All right, so if we now go down, we've connected XMMS to ReLofter. But we won't hear anything else for a little bit now, because ReLofter, because I had this complicated patch, ReLofter is not connected to my ALSA outputs. So we'll just start up a bunch of plugins. This is called Laid Backer. It's meant to feed drum tracks through, and it makes them more laid back. Surprise, surprise. Then we have Retro Delay, which is really retro, man. The Mad Shifter. The wonderful tape stop, which we'll come to in a little bit. And last but not least, the Paris EQ. And lo and behold, all of a sudden we have sound. Now let's go back to ReLofter. Tighten the loop up. I wish we could get a bit more volume. Let's see what we can do here. So we can hit the bypass button on Retro Delay. Now there's no... Let's crank its volume up a little bit. Add some reverb on it too. It actually doesn't kick it. Yeah, let's go over and... Some people think the Paris EQ is the best EQ has ever written. Yeah, man. All right. Now we're rocking. Okay. What exactly does Laid Backer do? Well, other than click horribly when you change its parameters, I can't really tell. If we go and bypass them all, let's just go bypass. So I think that's everything except Laid... Oh. It does something. And when you've really had enough of all of this kind of stuff... then you can just stop it all. So, if I can get my watch to come back, I think I'm still allowed to have 3 more minutes. So this is contact. Yes, folks, it's a Windows file browser. Okay, now I was actually going to use MIDI. I don't know. Well, maybe I will try to use MIDI. Let's have a look. I think we're on 1. And let me do the audio connection.
Contact. Contact.
Contact.
I have it on 4,096 frames per period, so latency is
contact,
not
contact,
a high point.
Contact, contact, contact.
However, that was a built-in thing, and I figure, you know, that we can't let these guys get away with only their own sounds. So now we'll go browse through the Unix file system. Right now, Contact is searching my entire user partition for audio files. Now we have a new sound as well. So just to link the two worlds both together.
Contact.
Hello, this is Linus Torvalds, and I pronounce Linux as Linux.
Okay, so contact works. I have every reason to believe that if you want to go spend $400 on the real thing, that it'll work too. If you like the full sound, this might be a bit loud, so let's just...
Contact.
This is all four layers.
Contact. 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 Contact.
So that's contact. And then lastly, but not leastly, my favorite plugin of all. I don't want to quit out of it. No. This is the bomb. Whoops. Free software. They asked for you to make a donation to a Free Tibet organization. Get it back on the screen here a little bit more. Oh, he's on there. Okay. Thank you very much. So. Just one last comment. Just to, you know, to give credit where credit's due. All of this stuff was possible to do with the code that Kettle wrote. And in fact, I think it was only a couple of months ago that he bought out a wrapper around Ulsa Sequencer and Jack and his code. So you could have actually run all of these using his code as well. It's not that this technology provides a new functionality, but it lets us do it in a way that scales properly for multi-track applications. I just want to clear that up. Okay, any questions?
I will allow exactly two questions, one from the net, one from here, so that we can cope with our previous delay. Let me see. Andrea, okay, how about you?
Thank you. I'm not sure I actually understood completely the legal status of the whole system.
That was
intentional. If we decided to...
That was intentional.
Now, the point is, of course, I would like very much to be able to distribute this bridge to UST with the Agnura de Moody.
Right.
But I would need to understand which part can distribute.
So the code that we distribute now is, I think actually there's one file that's LGPL just because it came from Mono. This other stuff that Tor and I wrote is GPL'd. The problem is in order to compile any of this stuff, you need to have two header files from Steinberg. If you were to distribute this as a precompiled binary, your users don't need anything. But if you distribute it as source code, and you want it to be useful, you have to include the header files, but you can't do that. So what we do at the moment is in the configure script, we look for the header files. If we can't find them, then we'll tell you where to get them. And they're freely available from Steinberg. It's not like you have to sign an NDA or even say that you're a developer. You can just get them, but you have to jump through a bunch of hoops. Once you've got them, then you can compile and build it. However, even then, it's not totally clear what the legal status is. Those files are not GPL'd, but they're not a library. They're a header file, but they're not part of the operating system. So they really fall into a gray area. I actually haven't spoken with Torben about this. I'm sure both of us will be perfectly happy to add a clause on our license which says, yes, it's GPL, but you can use these header files. The problem is if you use this in another application that has a GPL license without that clause, I don't know what it means. So unfortunately, it really is a total gray area right now. My own take on this, what I will do with Arda for the time being is the same as here, which is you won't get the header files. If you go fetch them from Steinberg, then you can build it from source. But I still think there's a gray zone.
Okay. Jörn, is there any questions from the net? Not. Okay. One more question from here. Okay, Julian.
Paul, you said all those VLC plugins, they are divided in two parts, DSP code and the GUI code. Could you use your VST loader with a text-based application so that Wine would know only to know to load the DSP code?
Absolutely. All you have to do is not call FST run editor.
So it would be you would be able to implement something like that in a text-based application.
Yeah. And in fact, both Ardour and Gallon at this point, for plugins that don't have a GUI, will build one for you. And I think Gallon, I can't even see Torben. Torben, where are you? Is it true that you can choose that as an option in Gallon at the moment? You can say, don't use the GUI, build one? Yeah, so you can, and I think Ardour will do that too. But you could equally, in a text-based application, just say, I never want to use the GUI and build something for yourself. The only place it will fail, there are some applications. I mean, I think Contact, for example, you just couldn't do it with Contact. I'm aware that you couldn't see it, but there's a zillion knobs on it. There's a zillion faders and controls. You could never build a text thing.
Generally, yes.
But for the little DSP ones that are just, you know, to do effects and stuff, yeah, it's very easy. I think I modified the Ardour code that used to build GUIs for LadSpar plugins. I think I spent a half a day modifying that to have it build them for VST plugins, and they both, in Ardour, they have the same interface now.
Okay.
So I'm really sorry, this is one of the probably most fascinating talks of these days that we have to cut you short here. But
I want to play the llama again.
Once more.
I want to play the llama again.
But Paul is with us, and I guess for those interested, you can do some demos outside where we have those little tables of the Internet Cafe. So I guess I suggest you just contact him there.
Mm-hmm.
And for now, Paul, is once again, thanks for a very professional talk.
Thank you.